This episode is so packed, I haven't got time to do the bit before the theme music. Because if I did, there just wouldn't be any space left anywhere, ever. So there's no bit before the theme music this week. It's just the theme music, okay? So the theme music is just about to start. Are you ready for the theme music? This is the theme music.
What's this? What's this?
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
What's this? What's this?
It's Christmas time.
What's this? What's this?
It's all humbug, I tell you.
What's this? What's this?
Well, just me and my trusty old Red Ryder carbine action 2 on the shot range model air rifle.
What is this?
It's the Total Christmas Podcast with your host, Jack.
He's an angry elf.
Merry Christmas, you beautiful people. It is the 10th of December when this goes out. The 10th of December. It's like, it's Christmas now. It's actually Christmas. Like, it was Christmas last time because it's December. Now it's like really Christmas. It's just Christmas and it's wonderful. I've been here all year and now it's just so Christmas. Like, my head is going to like explode. It's not going to explode actually, but I am really excited because it's Christmas. Let's quickly do the interactive bit. Are you ready for it? Here it comes. How are you? I can't do it. I'm too excited. I've got to get on with the show. I'm sorry. I'm glad that you're well. I think you said you were well. I couldn't hear what was going on. Just a couple of bits of housekeeping. I did the draw for the Biblioasis little mini Christmas ghost stories, and do you know, I only got four people's names, so the odds were pretty good of you winning. And the chap that won was Eddie Honan, who was actually on the show like what, three episodes ago. And you're probably thinking, oh yeah, I bet you rigged it. I didn't. I literally did put the four names in a, it wasn't a hat, I just screwed, wrote them down on a piece of paper, put them all together, pulled one out. It was Eddie Honan's. Okay, to be honest, all four of the people, you could have said it was rigged because you'd recognise their names possibly because they've sent in like messages and I've read out their stuff in the past. Anyway, if you didn't win, you know, never mind. But if you did win, that's you, Eddie. I posted them already, so hopefully you'll get them in the next couple of days. Definitely before Christmas, I'm sure. Do you know what? I had something else I needed to talk about before I started the show and I can't remember what it was. I cannot for the life of me remember what the other thing I was going to talk about was. So I guess we'll just get on with the show and we'll start with this. Last episode I played a song by Adam Kennedy. He's got a Christmas album out called Shrunk Down and Literally Living in My Christmas Village. I hope I got that right. It's Adam Kennedy and his Creative Commoners. Last week I played Cheap Cheap Chocolate, which was a song that I loved and found very funny. This week I'm playing another one of his songs, and this one is called The Plight Before Christmas. So here's the song.
Oh yeah. Well, there I was just the other night. I was sleeping like a big old Yule log. When out on the lawn there arose such a clatter that I sprang from my bed to see what was cooking. I smoked my head on the bedroom roof, started bleeding down my face. I stumbled out of bed and fell down the stairs. I was leaving a dark red trace. Up I stood and looked around the room. The fireplace is all I saw. I glanced out the window as reindeer flew with perfect pitch, roll, and yaw. Now, folks, you wouldn't believe what happened next. Well, maybe you would. Well, I knew Santa would be coming down the chimney soon, so I had to put the fire out fast. I ran with a bucket towards the flames, but got clotheslined by the ghost of Christmas past. He held his hand out and said,
"Come with me."
I said, "Wait, what the total shit?" Then we flew out of the window, and quick as a flash, I was dancing with old Fezziwig. Then the ghost of Christmas present came and showed me Santa burning in my fire. He then dared me to waft my hand through the flames, and I said that's something I don't desire. Then the ghost of Christmas future came and killed me.
Do you know what? I love that ending. I just think the ending is the best bit. I hope you enjoyed that song. If you want to check out the rest of Adam's album, there's a link in the show notes. I'll also put a link on Facebook, and it's quite easy to find. It's Adam Kennedy and his Creative Commonaires, and it's at adamkennedy.bandcamp.com, and you can find all his stuff there. Also, that song is the only one on the album that's got its own video, so I'll also put a link onto YouTube, and you can watch Adam singing the song. I really hope you enjoyed it, and I'll have another song from Adam Kennedy again next week. Now it's time for this. So the past few episodes, I've been playing a story from Ed Daly, the writer of the Christmas book, The Ultimate Guide to Your Favourite Holiday. And this episode, I'm playing an interesting story from his book, where he talks about two of the most popular Christmas toys of all time. So yeah, here's the story from Ed. Here it comes.
Hi, Total Christmas Podcast listeners. This is Ed Daly, author of The Christmas Book. In my book, I tell the story behind all of the hot toys over the past century and change. Here, I'll give you the story behind two of them, the teddy bear and Barbie. The teddy bear was the hot toy of 1906. In 1902, President Theodore Roosevelt was on a hunting trip in Mississippi. To make the big guy feel good, a few of his handlers tied a black bear to a tree. Instead of killing the defenseless bear, Teddy set it free. Stories of the great big game hunter letting the bear go free made the news, and political cartoonist Clifford Berryman drew the picture of the incident. Brooklyn shopkeeper Morris Mictum saw that cartoon and had his wife make a stuffed fabric Teddy's bear to put in the store's front window. Mictum's bear became incredibly popular, and the shopkeeper was soon running his own toy company. The term teddy bear soon became the standard for all stuffed bears. The Barbie was the hot toy in 1959. The founder of the Mattel toy company, Ruth Handler, noticed her daughter liked playing with adult paper dolls and had an idea. What about adult dolls marketed to young girls? So she made a doll that seemed suspiciously like a German toy already out on the market called the Build Lily. Build Lily was a call girl gag gift that could be found in tobacco shops. Handler covered up the doll's provocative physique with clothing similar to the style of the stars of the day, like Marilyn Monroe, and marketed it as Barbie. Handler sold over 300,000 Barbies in the first year. In 2001, a new line of fashion dolls came out called Bratz, which were essentially just Barbies with bigger eyes. They were an instant hit, but then Mattel sued them and was given $100 million for the theft.
So there you go. If you want to hear more about the other popular Christmas toys throughout the years, check out Ed's book. It's called The Christmas Book, The Ultimate Guide to Your Favourite Holiday. I'll put up a link on the show notes, and there'll be a link in Facebook. Check it out. And thanks again to Ed for sending that one through.
Jingle, jingle, jingle for a segment.
So last week, at the end of the episode, I asked if you could go out and share the podcast with the people you know. And I don't think anyone did, actually. And the reason I said that, no one seemed to share the link to the episode on Facebook. So I'm guessing no one bothered. And that's, I can't force you. You know, I'd like it if you did. It's Christmas. Why not spread the love? But you didn't. But listen to this, right? This is what I got from Kevin Church, whose story I'm going to be reading later on, right? I would share the podcast if it were not for the top 10 movie segment. That part annoys me. I don't see why anyone would care to hear some stranger's top 10 Christmas movies. In fact, the night I found your podcast, it was cold. I was out walking and the episode, don't remember which one, basically started with the top 10 list. I was thinking, what's this rubbish? Some guy just reads out slightly various lists of the same movies. And why would anyone care what other people's top Christmas movies are? I would have turned it off if my phone wasn't tucked in a pocket and my fingers weren't so cold. So, there you go, kids. That's how some people feel about this segment. Now, I can't lie to you. I sort of agree with them. I don't love this segment anymore. I wasn't expecting it to run like it has, but so many people have sent in their lists. It seems like this is the thing that people like want to get involved with. Well, before I get into the lists this week, I need to clarify something. Last week, I messed up Adam Parker's list. I don't quite know what happened. I was putting it into the spreadsheet, and it got messed up. I've readjusted it, so I've changed the score and it's back on the chart where it should be. Just to let you know that I did put the correct list up on Facebook. Sorry about that, Adam. I did email him actually and let him know that happened. So the five lists I'm reading out this week are from Sean Sotka from the Christmas podcast, Adam Kennedy, who I played a song from earlier, Benjamin Hall, Julia Sibilla, and Paul Hudderbein. So I'm not going to read out their lists. They're the five new lists that were sent in. I haven't got time to read out their lists, so don't be annoyed that I didn't. But I have charted their films on the top list. Now, there's 25 on there now, so I'm going to give the full countdown, and this is it now. I'm not taking any more lists in. This is how the final list stands, as judged by me. Play the music. At number 25, we have Ed Daly. At number 24, Shiona Birch. Number 23 is Stacey McKinsey. Number 22, the man who started this all, it was Robert Nicholas. Number 21, Anthony Caruso. Number 20, new in, is Paul Hudderbein. Number 19 is Katie Gibson. Number 17, Jennifer and Elmer. Number 16, also a new entry, is Sean Sotka. Number 15, the show's number one fan, Lee Mayer. Number 14, our American Scandinavian correspondent, Benji Pearson. Number 13, Art Kilmer. Number 12, another new entry, is Julie Sibilla. Number 11 is Jeffrey Malcolmson. Number 10, Scott Newman. Number 9, Adam Kennedy, another new entry. Number 8, Adam Parker. Number 7, Mike Westphal. Number 6, this week's highest new entry, Benjamin Hall, which means the top 5 stays the same, with number 5, Eddie Honan. Number 4, Dan Carlson. Number 3, Mary Pulte. Number 2, Frank and Shelley. And at number 1 is Crick Jiminy. Congratulations, Crick Jiminy. Your top 10 Christmas movies is the top 10 Christmas movies as judged by me. Now, boys and girls, I've got a twist for you. Because since we started this segment, it was always judged by me. But next week, I'm going to have a new countdown. And this is going to be all the lists that were sent in as judged by the people who sent in lists. So what I'm going to do, and this is going to take a while, I'm not looking forward to it. I've got a spreadsheet. I've got to work out each film, how many times it charted and where it charted on each person's list. I'm going to do the maths, and out of those 25, we're going to have a brand new chart, and this isn't judged by me. I've got nothing to do with it. This is judged by how you sent in your lists and where each film scored. So it'll be interesting to see next week who is the top of the list. So this whole time I've been judging, but now it's down to the lists that are going to judge, if that makes sense. Anyway, that's the end of this segment. So I'm guessing our friend Kevin Church fast-forwarded this bit. So welcome back, Kevin Church, because it's time for this. Last week, I spoke to Aurelio O'Brien, the writer of Family Trees, and I did a book review. It's a great book. I put the link on Facebook. You should get a copy. It's a really lovely story. But after we finished chatting, we started talking about his Christmas decorations, and he has got a collection of some of the weirdest Christmas decorations you've ever seen. So he sent me pictures, and I'm going to be putting those on Facebook. But right now, this is our chat about Aurelio's interesting Christmas decoration collection. So yeah, here it is. Aurelio, I want you to tell us just the background about what got you interested in these interesting Christmas decorations.
Well, I've always enjoyed Christmas, and I've always enjoyed the decorating of Christmas. And then I came from a creative family, so we used to make a lot of our own ornaments. My with six kids and a single income, my father, you know, we didn't go out and buy lots of ornaments. A lot of the times they were homemade, and so we did a lot of that. And then when I left home, I didn't get to take any of the ornaments with me. That was all left at home. And so I just started collecting and making ornaments myself. And then when I met my partner and we got married, he and I have been collecting ornaments for the past 40 years. And usually if we go into the store and we see ornaments there, usually the ones that are unusual, like, you know, kind of strange, or you go, why would they make an ornament of that? Those are the ones that we tend to aim towards. So we have quite a collection of very, very odd ornaments. I have one of space satellites and alien flying saucers, and, you know, just the really sort of odd ones are the ones that appeal to me.
So what was the first decoration you bought, like the first crazy decoration that sort of set you on a path to keep buying these outlandish decorations?
Well, let me think. It's You know, it may have been something as simple as a glass ornament in the shape of a pickle, which at the time, like, you know, 40 years ago, you know, I mean, now all that kind of stuff is more popular. But at the time, it was kind of like, oh, who would make an ornament of a pickle? But I started collecting ethnic ornaments, and that was sort of a phase. And so over the years, like I said, it's been 40 years of this. Over the years, you know, I have like ones that are African masks, and I have ones that are, you know, shaped like spiders, made out of glass beads, but shaped like spiders. So they're sort of woven together like, you know, like a piece of jewelry, but it's, you know, like a spider or something. All those things kind of keep leading me down different paths. And then every once in a while, I will make an ornament. For instance, this year I made an ornament in the shape of a COVID virus, just as a commemorative COVID ornament.
just so you know, boys and girls, he's shown me it on the video, and it looks quite festive, actually. It's not a Christmas colours.
Very festive.
Yeah, not one I'd put on my tree necessarily. It looks a lot like, if it the main body of it's black, but if it was orange, it looked like one of those decorations that people make out of an orange where they stuff all the clove.
Yeah, it's very similar to one of those clove orange things. Yes, which they have a name, and I don't remember what they're called, but yeah, and what we've been doing lately, and I will send you pictures of this, is we stopped having a tree every year because you know, we want to be more environmentally conscious, and but we have all these ornaments, and I wanted to put them up. Well, in our living room and dining room, we have picture rails that travel around the room, and we got the idea of, oh, well, we can, you know, just hang the ornaments from the picture rail all the way around the room, and it actually comes out quite beautifully, and it's a really nice way to see all the ornaments, because, you know, when you have them on a tree, there's always ones at the back or ones where you have to get down on your knees to see them, and here they're all at eye level, and they're all, you know, surrounding the whole entire room. I'll send you pictures of that. You can post on your Facebook, and we found it to be a really nice way to do the ornaments, so that's what we do these days.
Do you know, that is a really good idea, because I'd never thought of this, but you're right. You've got the Christmas tree there, and the ornaments are there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they're just in the corner on the tree, and you can spend time looking at it, but people tend not to. But as if they were all at eye level, I can imagine if I was at someone's house, I'd spend my time looking at every single ornament. That's a really good idea.
And especially with our collection, because they're also unusual, you do want to look at all of them. And so it's almost like, you know, they're all put out on display for Christmas.
Yeah. What I also love is the fact that you go for the ones that you'd see and you think, who on earth would buy that? Well, it's you on earth that would buy that. But I know that if I saw stuff like that, I just know I'd veer away. And that's great. At least there's someone out there buying all these
things. Right. Well, and I have to buy them because they're not going to last long, because, you know, it's like there's going to be two or three of us in the world that are going to want them, and then nobody else is going to want them.
So give us a list then. Come on, name a few. I need you to do it this way, because this is audio, and if people don't go on the Facebook page and they don't see the pictures, they need to know. So, because I've seen pictures of some of them, and they are insane. I can't understand who would buy them. So give us a list, maybe a top five that spring to mind that are the weirdest ones, and if you can think of any more, you can give us our like honorable mentions as well.
Well, I have one that's in the shape of a gorilla head or King Kong's head or something. I have one of my strangest ones is that I love. It's really beautiful, actually, but it's very odd. It has almost like a little girl doll head, and it's a glass-blown ornament. It has a little girl's head, and then with a Christmas tree growing out of the top of her head. And it's blown glass. And it, like I said, it's quite beautiful, and it almost looks like they had a double mold and the tree was going to be a separate ornament, but they just sort of left them stuck together. I don't know, but it's very odd. And so that's one of the stranger ones we have. And then, let's see, I have one. I found one that it's made of plastic, and then it has a spring and then a little piece of toast coming out of it. It's a toast in the shape of a toaster. And then the piece of toast is sort of popping out of the top of it. And because I worked on the film, The Brave Little Toaster, I then went back in and painted the toaster's face on the toaster. So it's kind of a Brave Little Toaster ornament now, which is kind of cool. I have ornaments that were made kind of Day of the Dead ornaments that were made by a friend of ours. They're almost on like little biscuits that she made, where you make a dough out of mostly salt and flour, I guess it is. Like a permanent dough sort of thing. So she made these like little cookies, and then she hand-painted them with kind of Christmas skeletons and things like that. And they're quite beautiful, but, you know, they're, again, kind of odd. Oh, let's see, what else do I have? Lots of just strange hand-blown glass in different shapes. Like I said, I've got a space satellite in hand-blown glass. I've got orca whale, lots of metallic cars of various ages and shapes. Oh, gosh, you put me on the spot. I should have brought it.
I'm sorry, yeah.
No, that's all right. It's been a while. And, you know, it's funny because with COVID, like last year, we didn't decorate at all because we were kind of hunkered down and nobody was going to be coming over, and we didn't really feel all that festive. So I didn't get any of the decorations out last year. But this year, now things are opening up a little bit more. And actually, a lot of my siblings, you know, the stars of my book, are coming to visit at the end of this month and the beginning of December. And so we're kind of having a little family gathering. And so I'm going to, right after Thanksgiving, I'm going to pull out the decorations and put everything up before they come. So that'll be kind of interesting. Then they'll be very familiar to me. But right now I'm trying to think of all my different ornaments.
So you've got to tell me, where are you finding these crazy decorations then? Like, is it, it's not like in Kmart and places like that. Surely, what kind of shops are you getting them in?
Some of them I find online. And so if you kind of look for, you know, these companies that sell ornaments and a lot of times the magazines that sell strange toys, or like Archie McPhee, things like that, they'll have odd ornaments that are in weird shapes and things like that. And I tend to like the ones that they're kind of nicer. You know, I like the hand-blown glass ones as opposed to the plastic. I tend to shy away from plastic things unless they're really remarkable in some other way. Mm. I tend to stay away from plastic ornaments. I like either the glass or metal, sort of natural substances kind of things is more interesting to me.
Yeah, sure.
Because in my living room, I have a deer head and a boar's head, and I decorate those as well. So I have Santa Boar and the head of Rudolph on my wall.
You see?
So for Christmas.
Red nose on it, do you?
Yeah, I'll send you pictures of that.
Yes, you have to do that, because like I say, this isn't one of those things that works perfectly well on a
podcast. Right. Some years my animal heads decide to change places, and so I one year the boar decided to be Rudolph. So I put fake horns on him and the nose, and then the deer was Santa deer.
Fantastic. Right. Like I said, I'm going to put the pictures on Facebook. So send me a load so I can share them all with everyone, because sometimes these things don't come across as well, but I want people to see your ornaments. And I bet some of my listeners have got some interesting ones. I tend to be a bit basic with mine. I don't, every year we try and buy a new ornament each to go on the trip.
Yeah.
But they're
a
little bit individual, but they're all still very Christmassy, and they're not something you wouldn't necessarily see on someone else's. So
Yeah, and I'm all for the tradition, you know, the traditional Christmas. You know, it's lovely. It's like, why would you not like that? But the unusual ones just really appeal to me. And like I say, they're kind of, in a way, they're sort of orphan ornaments. I kind of like that. It's like I'm adopting the ornaments nobody wants.
No one wants. Like you're saving them from a bin.
They're like the island of unwanted toys in the
misfit toys.
Thing,
yes.
Right? It's like
the misfit decoration.
That's kind of how I look at it. And I do like them. I really enjoy them. So.
Fantastic. There we go. So thank you very much for your time, Aurelio. It's been a real pleasure talking to you. And I will be sharing those pictures on Facebook. Thanks very much indeed.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. You know, I really enjoyed chatting to Aurelio about that, because although every year we buy new decorations, none of ours are like particularly weird. They're all kind of just very festive and nice. If you've got any really weird Christmas decorations that you've bought over the years, please send me a picture of them and I'll mention them on the podcast, and then I can stick them up on the Facebook page so everyone can get to see them. And like I said, I will be putting some of Aurelio's pictures up on the Facebook page so you get to see what we were talking about. I know that segment didn't necessarily work great on a podcast where you're talking about these decorations, but I hope you enjoyed it all the same. Thanks again to Aurelio. Now it's time for this. A couple of episodes ago, I read out a joke that was sent in by our podcast mum, Mary Polty. And as jokes go, it was a joke, is about all the praise I can heap upon it. So she has sent me another joke, and I'm going to read it to you now. So here we go, kids. If you're excited, don't be, because this is actually worse than the last one. I don't want to, like, you know, make a big thing about this, but this is one of the worst jokes I've ever heard. I don't even know if you could call it. I'll do it and see. You be the judge. Why did the Christmas cookie take a COVID test? Because it felt crummy. I warned you, didn't I? I warned you. That's all I can do. I've done everything I could. I'm sorry. But I shouldn't be the one apologising. We all know who should be apologised. Let's just move on to the next bit, shall we? Yeah, let's do that. Okay, cool. Forget that ever happened.
Humbug.
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 Bah humbug.
It's all humbug, I tell you.
Christmas a humbug, Uncle? Oh, you don't mean that, surely.
This episode's version of A Christmas Carol was sent to me by Benjamin Hall. He sent it a couple of months ago, and I said to him, yep, I like the look of that. I'll review it. And that's what I'm doing now, apparently. I think so. Am I?
Yeah, you are. Get on with it.
All right, no need for that. Yeah, it's called Carol's Christmas, and it was from 2004. Now, it's set in the modern day, and the plot is quite different to your standard version of A Christmas Carol, which means I've got to go through like the whole thing. Now, I don't want to waste too much time giving you every little bit of it, so I'll sort of give you an overview of the story so you get the picture. It's an interesting take, actually. It stars Tom Everett Scott, who's been in a load of stuff, but he's not someone that I was actually familiar with by name. I sort of half recognised his face. He plays a chap called Adam Carroll, and this is the deal. He works for a card company, and he designs Christmas cards. But the thing is, he's like sort of lost his love of making cards, and we find out later why that is. So the film sort of opens up with he's having a bit of a feud with his neighbour who nicks a hat and a scarf off his snowman out of his garden. Carol goes to work. We find out that he's making these awful Christmas cards that, you know, they're not joyful. They're quite sad and a bit twisted, really. Then he goes to see his girlfriend, who is really attractive, and it's clear that she's going to ask him to marry her. But he's totally preoccupied with his neighbour, whose name is Rose Cog. I've already mentioned that. And they're at a coffee shop. Do you know what? This really annoyed me. You know, like when people go to a bar, or they go to a coffee shop, or they go somewhere and they order something, and then they get it, and then they leave almost straight away. It's like, look, I don't care what's happened. At least drink your coffee or have your beer. You know what I mean? Anyway, that happens. So they leave the coffee shop because he thinks he sees Rose Cog out in the street. And they go home, and when they're going home, we see a face in the door knocker. Now, this is the interesting thing. Jacob Marley turns up later, right? It ain't the same person whose face was in the door knocker. The person whose face is in the door knocker is a chap called Dennis Duggan, and he was the director of this. We don't see him again. So there's no reason it should have been him. I don't know what that was about. I don't get it. Anyway, they go in, and they go upstairs, and they're in bed, and they're sort of going to get down to doing stuff. And he hears something outside, and this is blooming neighbour Rose Cog, like stealing some electricity or something. And he gets up, and his girlfriend's like, oh, do you know what? Forget it. I'm going home. Which annoyed me again, because that's another one. It's like, oh, because she says, I've got to get up early. And it's like, well, hang on. 30 seconds ago, you were about to sort of get down to it, and now you're leaving. It's like, well, how long are we going to spend at it? Do you know what I mean? Let's not discuss that. Anyway. At this point, sorry, I should say, his neighbour, Rose Cog, is like this really nasty old man. Rose Cog is his surname. That's an anagram of Scrooge. Do you see what they did there? Yeah, that's incredibly clever, kids. His first name is Zeb, which is a bit like Ebenezer, I suppose. Yeah, and he is actually played by Wallace Shawn. And I'm sure you're all familiar with Wallace Shawn. He's a little bloke with a bit of a lisp. I'll play his voice for you. Here you go.
Nonetheless, I slipped and fell on your sidewalk, and you're going to have to pay for it. Now, here is the doctor's bill for multiple treatments on my back. Here is the tally of fees for my lost time, and here is the...
Do you recognise his voice? He was in The Princess Bride, among other things. Very famous. You'd recognise him if you saw him. Anyway, Carol, Adam Carroll, he falls asleep, right? And then he's woken up by... Yeah? This is the worst bit in the whole film, right? The ghost of Jacob Marley. But this isn't Jacob Marley. This is like Jacob Marley's grandson, who is also related to, are you ready for this? Bob Marley.
I am, in fact, the ghost of Jacob Marley, man.
With all due respect, wasn't Jacob Marley, you know, British and white?
Yeah, man. But when we were a colony, you know, his grandson went on one crazy Jamaican vacation. And history, including music history, was made.
Get out. So Bob Marley's related to Jacob.
Hey, we are one love.
It defies belief. It's so unfunny. It's like this Rastafarian kind of guy talking in sort of like the patois. And it's just the least funny joke I could imagine. And what annoyed me is he's got no connection with either Rosecog or Carol. So why is he there? Do you know what I mean? Because like in A Christmas Carol, the reason Marley turns up is because he knows Scrooge. He's like, oh, just to let you know, these three ghosts are coming. And the three ghosts, it's not like there's four ghosts and Marley's one of them. It's like the three ghosts and Marley's like an add-on just for Scrooge's sake, right? So why has it got to be Jacob Marley for everyone else? That's not Jacob Marley's job, I'd believe, anyway. I can't tell you how much that really annoyed me. It's just pointless. It's like a joke that isn't funny. A bit like the one Mary sent in. Thanks for that, Mary. It's a bit like that, but it goes on so much longer. You've got this character there, the whole... just pointless. Anyway, so Carol's there, going, no, you got the wrong guy. You're after Rosecog, because Jacob Marley's calling him Rosecog. And he's going, no, I'm not Rosecog. Rosecog lives over the street. And he's like, no, I'm pretty sure this is the right place. He's like, no, I'm not. Anyway, he warns him that the ghosts are coming, and don't you know it, at 1 o'clock, the first... That annoyed me as well, because it's not like you're going to get three ghosts on three separate nights, like in the book. It's one's coming at one, one's coming at two, another one coming at three. Anyway, who should turn up first? The ghost of Christmas past? No, actually, the ghost of Christmas present. I'm not quite sure why this happened. I don't know if they thought the story would flow better. It didn't, but there you go. She turns up, and she's got like this universal remote, and she's sort of using it to zap them to different places at the present, like the Christmas present. And he's trying to say to her, look, I'm not Rosecog. And she's like, won't have it. She won't believe him. And it's obvious that he's not Rosecog, but she's still not having it. It's just stupid, really. Anyway, so he grabs the remote off her and takes her back to when he first met his girlfriend, whose name I should have said is Carrie. And we see when they met, and it's wonderful and lovely. And he's there, like, you know, you can see that he's been touched by it. And then they take him to see Rosecog's daughter. And he's saying, look, my daughter is older than me. That doesn't make any sense. How could I be Rosecog? And she's like, won't have it. It's pointless. And we see that Rosecog has got a granddaughter as well, but apparently he's never met her. Not much happens then. Let's move on, because this could take forever. So who should turn up next? It's the ghost of Christmas past. And this one is played by a chap called Larry Miller. Now, if you saw him, you'd recognise him, but I can't think of anything that I can suggest that you definitely know him from, if that makes sense. I remember him being in The Nutty Professor. That's one that always stuck in my mind. He's like this bald guy. That's pretty much it. I think he's been bald forever, because I can't remember any of his roles, him having hair. I like it. He's a great actor, though. Anyway, if you saw him, you'd know him. So he realises that Carol isn't Rosecog, but he's like, oh, look, we could get in trouble. Could you just pretend to be Rosecog? And Carol decides to play along with him, which is nice, I suppose. So he takes Carol back to see Rosecog's past, and we see, like, when Rosecog was a young man, he actually saved the card. I should have said this at the start, actually. Rosecog used to work for the card company that Carol works for now, and in Rosecog's past, when he was just starting out, he actually saved the card company. And we see him there at this Christmas party, and his wife is smoking hot. Now, if you've seen Wallace Shawn, you'd know, no offense to the bloke, he's not the most attractive man on the planet, but his wife is gorgeous, like proper gorgeous. And I don't know how he pulled that one off, but well done to him for that, I guess. And we find out that he used to really love being in the card business. Here we go.
You know, some people think that greeting cards are nothing more than trifles. I heartily disagree. We are the expressors for those who cannot express. We are packaging hugs and laughs and tears.
So then after this scene, Carol's like, oh, can I just go and have a look at my past? And he's like, let's go back to 1999. But he presses the wrong button and goes back to 2000. And this is where we find out why he hates Christmas now. And the reason he hates Christmas is because he went to a ice hockey game with his girlfriend at the time, and dressed as a caribou or a reindeer, he went on the ice and proposed to her in front of everyone, and she said no because she was going out with the back end of a horse. That actually happens. That it's like, when I say it, it doesn't think that what you're talking about, but that is actually what happens. Then we go back to Rosecog's past, and we see Rosecog's daughter being born, and we see him playing with his family and that at Christmas, and it's obviously, you know, loves being a family man. But then we show later on, like only a few years later, that Rosecog's working late and it's Christmas and he's not there for his daughter on Christmas Day. Then a little bit later, his wife has a heart attack and she's in the hospital, and he gets there late and she's already died before he gets to the hospital, and his daughter is furious at him, and this is why we found out that his daughter hasn't spoken to him in all these years. And from there it goes to show how this affects Rosecog and how he doesn't want anything to do with the card industry anymore, and he moves out of the company.
What we put out at this company, ladies and gentlemen, are trifles. Bland attempts to capture human emotions on paper. For 30 years, we've been packaging hugs and laughter and tears, but they all just end up in a box at the back of a closet. And the people we package these emotions for end up in a box as well.
So at this point, I just want to say about Carol's past that we find out the reason Carol hates Christmas is because he proposed to his girlfriend like 4 years ago. Right, that's fine, but the year later, he met this lovely new girl. Carrie is the girlfriend that he's got now. So it's like 3 years later. You're telling me that he still hates Christmas 3 years later, even though at Christmas, he met his new girlfriend, who is beautiful. So I don't know what's going on there. It seems a bit... Let's just face it, the whole thing is a bit weak. It's a weak plot, so let's just get to the end of it, shall we? Who should turn up next? But it's the ghost of Christmas yet to come. Is it? No, because they call him the ghost of Christmas future. And not only that, they keep saying that he's death as well, because he's, you know, got the robe and all that lot. It's like, no, the ghost of Christmas yet to come may look a bit like the Grim Reaper. He is not the Grim Reaper. He is the ghost of Christmas yet to come. I guess that they didn't bother reading the book. I guess they just sort of had seen maybe Mickey's Christmas Carol and thought, yeah, we could do a version of that. I'm guessing that's what they did. Now, he turns up originally and he's like this massive, tall, looks like the Grim Reaper, like with a really nasty voice. I'll play a bit for you.
Zebediah Rosecog, your time has come.
And then he suddenly takes off his hood, shrinks down, and who should it be but Van Troyer. Do you remember Van Troyer? Sadly, he passed away a few years ago, but he was Mini-Me in the Austin Powers films. Yeah, that should be enough to ring a bell. He's just a very, very small chap. So the Ghost of Christmas Future takes Carol to see Rosecog's future, and they go to like this estate sale where they're just selling off all of Rosecog's stuff. And funnily enough, Carol is actually there because it's in like his neighbour's house. He's going to see what's there. And we find out that Carol has lost his job creating greetings cards, and now he works writing fortune cookies, which is still a job, still a job. And we also find out that he has split up with his girlfriend that he was with at the time. And then the final scene in the future, we see Rosecog laying in bed in a hospital, and he's on death's door, and he's like, she didn't come, did she? I didn't think she would. And then he dies, and then just after she dies, his daughter turns up, and they're like, sorry, it's too late, you've missed him, he's gone. And that's the end of that bit, right? So then Carol wakes up, and it's Christmas Day, and it's funny because he turns on the TV and it's George C. Scott on A Christmas Carol, and the bit shouting out the window to the boy in the street going, you boy, what day is today? And so, and then Carol does it, right? And it's really funny, actually. I like this bit. So Carol goes to his front door, and there's a lad walking by, and he shouts out, I'll play it for you.
Hey, kid! What day is it?
What? It's only like Christmas Day, you loser.
Do you know what? I just found that really funny. I just liked it. I just did. So now you think the film's nearly over. But no, right? We're only two-thirds of the way through. Because now, because it wasn't like Rosecog that saw the ghosts, Rosecog hasn't changed, so Carol has got to go and try and change Rosecog. So he goes round there, and I don't want to go into it because this will take forever, but he eventually does change Rosecog, and then Rosecog goes to see his daughter, which is wonderful. And then at the very end, and this is the worst bit of the whole film, right? Carrie, I should have said this earlier, but I didn't. Carrie is a cellist. She plays the cello for this orchestra. And it's Christmas Day and they're having like a big concert, and Carol goes there to see Carrie, his girlfriend, right? And he's all dressed up, right? He's already smart, suited and booted, like tie, jacket, like proper suit on, looks very smart, right? He goes backstage with the ghosts. Don't know why the ghosts have turned up again now, but, you know, thank goodness they're there, because I suppose they got paid. He decides to dress up as a reindeer and go on stage and ask her to marry him while she's doing her solo. And I have a question for you. What is that? What is that? It just makes that weird. You know, the first time I watched it, I thought, like, oh, this is going, this is happening. And then the second time I watched it, I was like, actually, this is really weird. I watched it a third time, because I'm taking notes on that, right? I was angry. I was like, no, this is ridiculous. What, why would he do this? Not only has he got a suit on, so he looks smart anyway, just wait till she's finished her bloody solo, mate. But no, he goes, ruins the whole stage show. He, like, knocks the conductor off, who is sort of the bad guy of the piece, so that's not so bad. And goes up to Carrie and, like, gets down on one knee, and then, oh my goodness, I don't want to go into it. Well, that's, do you know what, I'm ending it there. But then he sort of says goodbye to the ghosts at the end, and that they all live happily ever after, I guess. I don't want to give you any more, because we could be here all day talking about this blooming film. But this is one thing I do want to say, right? The director, and then I just got to say, this film, although it is trolley, like, proper bad, I actually quite enjoyed it, okay? You've got to, like, switch your brain off for a little bit, because obviously things like him dressing as a reindeer to ask, pointless. But this film, right, it's really bad. There's a lot, it's like, it seems like it's badly filmed, you know, a lot of it, the acting's just okay, it's not great. But, right, the director, he directed some half-decent films. Like, I'd say half-decent, some proper good films, actually. Like, his first sort of movie was Problem Child. I don't know if you remember that. It wasn't great, but, you know, it was okay for his time. But then he also did Happy Gilmore. Happy Gilmore, that is a good film. And he did Beverly Hills Ninja, which actually wasn't that good. But, you know, some people liked it. He did Big Daddy, again, with Adam Sandler. That was half-decent. I quite enjoyed that one. Quite a few Adam Sandler ones, actually. I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry. You Don't Mess with the Zohan. Jack and Jill. Grown Ups and Grown Ups 2. So, do you know what? He's actually directed some proper, decent comedies. You know, not necessarily to my taste. I didn't really like Happy Gilmore, but the rest of them, meh. But then he, this... What? I don't know what to say, because it's so bad. Like, what did he have his eyes shut while he was doing it? Was he drunk? Was it Christmas and he was on the mulled wine? I don't know, but I just know it's naff. But not really naff. So what I'm saying is, it's okay. If you want something different, because every year you might watch Scrooged, and you might, because that's set modern day, you might think, do you know what, I've seen Scrooged every, actually no, just go and watch Scrooged instead. If you've got time on your hands though, and you think, do you know what, I'll give it, problem is, right, it's on YouTube, but it's really poor quality, like really fuzzy, so yeah, you might find it on the Hallmark channel, because I think it is a Hallmark movie, so you might get to see it this year, but I'm not sure, you know, it is on YouTube if you want to check it out, or what you could do is not bother, you know, you've heard the review, I probably haven't sold it to you, really. So anyway, that is this episode's version of A Christmas Carol. It's called Carol's Christmas, and it could be worse. But it could be so much better. It really could.
Fading joy and surprise, and the gifts we despise.
It's craptacular.
Last episode, I read out a story that was sent in by Kevin Church about the worst present he'd ever received. And this week, I'm reading out another story sent by Kevin Church about another worst present he ever received. So, it's quite a long one. You just have to bear with me while I read it out. And I'm sure Kevin, who's from Canada, appreciates my fantastic British accent reading out his stories. So, here we go. My dad is cheap. He makes decent income, a very comfortable salary in fact. However, you wouldn't know it based on his Christmas gifts. Gifts in general, really, are outside his scope of showing love. His presents usually have that purchased on Christmas Eve from a gas station vibe. Meanwhile, for context, my uncle, his brother, who also makes a comfortable living, always spoiled my cousins. They got everything they wanted and needed all year round. So Christmas for them was truly extra special. New bikes, rollerblades, skis, video game consoles, music players, the goods. I remember these two Christmases back to back because we were with my uncle when we got our gifts from my dad. My brother and I, in our late 20s, each got a rather heavy wrapped box the size of a small briefcase. Intriguing, right? We opened it up to find one of those generic all-in-one hand tool sets. You know the kind, like it's a plastic case with some cheap pliers and a wrench with way too many different size sockets inside. My brother and I got the same identical set. It was probably like a buy one, get one free deal from the hardware store. Not very special or exciting indeed, but we both smiled and thanked him for the gift, you know the deal. Pretend to like it, show appreciation. We weren't used to any extravagance from him anyway, so it wasn't all that bad. But I do remember, though, the irony of opening that in front of my uncle, who had spoiled his kids. And then he watched us open a box of tools. Disappointing, but okay, maybe next year, there's always hope. Fast forward 12 months, and, okay, basically, reread the above. Christmas, my dad, my brother, my uncle, spoiled cousins, and a tool set. It was a different brand, or whatever, but it was the same thing. Plastic briefcase style type all-in-one tool set. I was gutted. Is your late 20s too old to still hope for something special from your dad? I was disappointedly shocked. I remembered the set from the previous year, which was at the bottom of a closet, somewhere completely untouched. I already owned a small assortment of tools, like basics, you know, screwdrivers, measuring tape, etc. I had those in the cupboard, which, you know, would mend any repairs I needed. I regret the words that come out of my mouth because my dad has mentioned it since, but it was almost like an involuntary reaction when I said, "What? I'm not a plumber." I don't remember what happened next. I probably said something like, "Thanks, Dad." And, well, I guess I'll put this set with the set from last year. And if you ever need 200 socket pieces, you know where to find them. Yeah, not my proudest moment. I just couldn't fake it again. It wasn't a big scene or anything. And we all went along enjoying the Christmas gathering. But I was very disappointed. The fact that he remembered and mentioned it later tells me he probably had a mix of embarrassment and shame from the gift and my reaction that night. Instead of trying harder or putting more thought into gifts, he's actually reversed efforts in the 10 years since. Gifts from him now are nearly completely thoughtless and void of any warmth, if anything at all. Actually, for several years after that, before my daughter was born, I travelled south with my girlfriend for Christmas to avoid the obligatory family stuff. Maybe, he thought, since we were spoiling ourselves with a Caribbean vacation, we didn't deserve anything from Santa or Dad again. So as mentioned above, this year I'm travelling to be near my daughter, so I won't be seeing my dad or any other family this Christmas. Cue the violins. I don't anticipate him going out of the way to make sure his son has something to open on Christmas morning, alone, in an Airbnb, in an unfamiliar town. Violin fades out. However, I look forward to being near my daughter and making new memories and traditions with her. I look forward to making sure her Christmases are full of warmth and wonder and dreams of sugar plums in her head. I've captured enough A Christmas Story, Home Alone and 1964's Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer to share with her, and that is the best gift I could ask for. So there you go. It's not a good one, is it? It's one thing getting a tool set you don't want, but then getting another one the following year. It's insult to injury, really, isn't it? But, you know, I suppose it makes you sort of appreciate when you get a good gift more, and I suppose it makes you want to buy better gifts for other people. So there's that, I suppose. Anyway, thank you so much, Kevin, for sending that one through as well. And, yeah. Merry Christmas. Now it's time for this.
Book review. Book review.
Christmas.
Book review.
This episode's book review is a book called Death at Holly Lodge by Louise R. Innes. Hope I said that right. It's spelled I-N-N-E-S. So I was contacted a while ago by a rep from Kensington Publishing asking if I'd review one of their books. And this book is part of a series called Cozy Mysteries. And they've got a lot of Christmas-themed ones. And to sum up what the books are like, it says, if you aren't familiar with a cozy mystery, it's a murder mystery where the murder takes place off the page. There's no violence, blood, sex and gore, and there's little to no cursing. Sometimes you'll find a damn here and there or darn. And the sleuth is usually an amateur with no police background. It's like Cozy Mysteries is sort of Gilmore Girls with murder. And that makes sense, actually. She sent me a list of the books that were coming out for Christmas, and this is the one that caught my eye, Death at Holly Lodge. And do you know what? I really liked it. I did. It's not the sort of book I'd normally pick up, but I really liked it. Yeah, I'll read out the blurb for you. It says, Santa has been found dead in the chimney at Holly Lodge, but when beauty shop owner Daisy investigates, she learns this isn't the jolly St. Nick we know and love. So that's the story, that her friend is moving into this big house and they're doing some renovations and they find this dead body dressed as Santa Claus in the chimney. And she starts helping the police work out who the guy is and what happened. This book is actually part of a series called the Daisy Thorne Mysteries. So Daisy Thorne is a young lady that owns a beauty salon, and she also on the side is a bit of a sleuth, bit of a detective, and she helps the police solve crimes. Now, I think there was only one book before this one, and it doesn't really matter that I hadn't read the other book. You know, within a few pages, you sort of get who the characters are and what's going on. And although it calls back to the previous book a little bit, I didn't feel like I'd missed anything because I hadn't read it yet. And it's a real page-turner. It's not, like I said before, this is not the sort of thing I normally read. You know, I read before I go to bed. That's normally when I do my reading. And to be honest, I like something a bit light and a bit humorous. And this was, you know, murder mysteries can sometimes be a bit dark and gritty. It's not like that. This is just a nice, lovely, comfortable read. You know, it's one of those that gets you involved, and it's a page-turner. You're thinking, who did it? You know, what's happening? Oh, so exciting. But it's not, you know, it's not nasty. It's not gritty. There's, yeah. I highly recommend it. And to be honest, the whole series, like I say, she sent me a list of all the ones to read, but this was the one, like I say, that caught my eye. And what's interesting, a lot of them, because I think the publishers are based in the US, but this one is actually from the UK, and it's not far from where I live. I used to live in a town very close to where this book was set. So if you're looking for something to read over the Christmas period, check out the Kensington Cozy Mysteries. And my particular favourite, or at least the one I've read and really enjoyed, was Death at Holly Lodge by Louise R. Innes. Yeah, it's just a nice read. So, yeah, that's this episode's book review. Why not get yourself out there and grab a copy of that? Now it's time for this. So, boys and girls, last year I played an interview with Frank and Shelley Arnold about the Christmas village they have in their house. Now, I think when I talked to them last time, no one sort of seemed to understand just how big their Christmas village was. I think they might have thought it was just a few pieces stuck on a table somewhere. But this is quite a big affair. And when I put the pictures on Facebook, it got the most feedback of any Facebook page I put on Facebook last year. It was just so popular, and because it is such a lovely village. So I'm chatting to them again. The village has changed a little bit, and we do talk about the changes. Also, I've got a couple of expert interviewers that help with the interview. So this is my chat with Shelley and Frank Arnold. Here we go. So boys and girls, this is the second year we're doing this, and we are talking to Shelley Arnold and Frank the Tank. If you remember last year, Shelley makes an incredible Christmas village. She sent me a video of it, which I will be putting up on the Facebook page. And she's here to talk about it with Frank the Tank. And I've got two expert interviewers that are going to discuss the village with them, aren't you?
Yeah.
Use your words, Juno.
Yeah.
Right. So, Robin, what was the first question you wanted to ask?
Did you have fun making it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. I had a really good time making it. I started making it on September 19th this year. So I started a little bit earlier than normal, but I knew I had some changes to make this year. So I wanted to get a head start.
How long did it take to make it?
It took about 6 weeks from the time I started until I finished, but I can't work on it every day because I have to work.
How do you turn it on?
How do I turn it on? Oh, well, let me show you. We turn it on with this remote right here.
Wow.
So when you turn, when you push the button number 2, it turns off. And when you push number 2 on, it turns on. And then if you push number 3, the cars turn on. That's in the New York City, which is a new spot in the village.
Wow.
And then I'll let Frank do the trains for you. Here you go, Frank.
Okay.
Have you ever ridden on the train, Robin?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes? Have you, Juno?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, do you know, we're having trouble seeing the train, actually. Where is it? Oh, there it goes.
Yeah.
There. And then there's one down here.
Oh, there it goes. Look at that.
Yeah.
Steam coming out.
Yeah.
So you've got 3 separate buttons. Is that 3 separate circuits on there then?
Oh, all one circuit.
All one circuit.
Oh, is it? But you've still got 3 separate bits to that circuit.
Yes.
Wow, that's a really long train.
Mm.
I don't know if you remember, but last year over here was Whoville.
I know. I noticed that in the video you sent me, and it's not there. So where's Whoville?
It's not there. Aha. So we'll show you where it's at. It is in our guest room, which is our Grinch room.
Whoa. So Whoville.
Whoville. And then there's the Grinch tree. And then the Grinch bed. Yeah. So this is Whoville, and it's sitting on a dresser.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we moved that so that we could do our New York City, because I got a skyscraper for Christmas. So.
That's right. Yeah, you told me about this. I can't remember if I mentioned it on the podcast, though, but I remember you mentioned that was one of the presents you got for Christmas. All of those other ones you've bought this year, have you, for the New York?
Yeah, so I got the World Trade Center Twin Towers Memorial. Frank and I saw that when we went to Bronner's a couple months ago. So we wanted to get that and add it. That's a very loud train.
Yeah, let me turn them off.
Okay, you turn them off. And then we have the Singer Building, the Woolworths Building, the Empire State Building, and then the Times Tower over here. And it actually goes up and down.
Oh, is that the ball?
Have you seen the ball?
Yes, so for New Year's Eve.
Correct.
Yeah.
Ah.
There it goes.
Did you see the ball going down?
Yeah.
And then it's going to blink. Happy New Year!
Look at that.
So then we've added a couple of movies to New York City, because we've added Elf,
uh-huh.
Buddy's Apartment, and then this is the World's Best Coffee Shop.
Oh, yeah.
And then we have Elf throwing some snowballs, and Elf helping Santa back here behind the Chrysler Building.
Yeah.
Oh, I see him. Yeah.
Hello, yeah. Santa.
Then we have the Miracle on 34th Street in here as well. We have Macy's. So we've added a couple more movies.
I see. Yeah, you did mention that last year. That's what you wanted to do. Statue of Liberty there as well.
Oh, yeah.
So remind me, were these all Department 57 or something?
Yeah, Department 56 is a lot of them. All of the skyscrapers are Department 56. And then there's a couple more. Another brand is called Lemax. And Lemax makes a lot of the animated pieces. So if you can see, like, the kids doing teeter-tottering and the tug of war. Let me see if we can get a little bit closer. Can you see? There's new fireworks back there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Look at this.
Yeah, wow. Fireworks.
Yeah. And then back here, that's new this year, the drive-in theater.
What does it show on the screen?
Yeah.
Well, it mostly says, go visit our refreshment center now to get your treats. And
okay, I get it.
There's about about seven different slides. Yeah, and there's a little girl here. It's hard to see.
Hello.
She's doing a snow angel.
Oh, yes. You see? She's doing a snow angel.
So the movie Ralphie, wow. The Christmas Story.
Uh-huh.
That's all set up pretty much on this street here. So the leg lamp, and then there's a young man flying a kite. He's going around and around with his kite.
Yeah.
Oh, there he goes. And then back there is the carnival. That's always a fun spot. It gets a little tricky to see it all. And this is Bedford Falls from It's a Wonderful Life. And back here, there's some kids that are sledding on a hill.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. And then a tire swing.
Yeah.
Well, what other questions do you need to ask, Shelley?
What's your favorite bit?
Oh, my goodness, Robin, that's a hard question. I think probably my favorite is, and you might not be able to see it very easily because it's daylight here, but the moon, you can kind of see right in front of you, it reflects on the lake.
Yay, green moon!
So when it reflects on the lake, that was a happy accident that is probably one of my favorite. Yeah. So it reflects on the lake.
Yeah.
Oh, I see it. Yes, I see. Yeah. So when you originally put the moon in there, you didn't plan to do that.
So the moon actually sits on a stand and it has a stick that holds it up. So I wanted to camouflage the stick by putting trees in front of it and the hill that it's sitting on. So it just happened to be behind the lake. And when you shut the lights off at night, it just kind of shines on the lake. So that was a happy accident.
That's good, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's one of my favorite spots. And probably Bedford Falls, because when Frank the Tank and I were dating, we used to watch It's a Wonderful Life every Christmas Eve together. So that has a lot of meaning to us.
So can you tell us about what you've got going on outside this year?
Outside? Well, Frank doesn't have anything going yet.
What?
He needs to... Frank! I know, he's late.
This is not good enough.
I know. And he's got to hurry up because we had an interview with a gentleman from a local newspaper, and it's going to be coming out in just a couple of days, and it actually references Frank's exterior setup. So he needs to get working on it. He's going to start today.
Okay.
So, yeah. So we're going to have our inflatables, which we have, I think, well, we just bought one done in Pennsylvania. So we bought a 9.5-foot Grinch inflatable.
Oh, cool.
And, so we'll have, I think we'll have like 13 inflatables.
Yeah. How many was it last year? Remind me.
I think it was 12.
Okay. So it's just the one extra.
So, yeah. We have one new one this year. And then we have, then we're going to have a mega tree this year, which is a 10-foot tall tree with pixels coming down from it, and he can program it to do what he wants it to do. And
oh, wow.
Then all of our lights they're programmed to come on to a radio station to music.
It's 10 foot tall. It's not inflatable, this one. This is just a...
They're like plastic strips, and they hold the pixels. And then, you know what pixels are, right?
I do know what a pixel is.
All right, so there's like a black strip, and the pixels are an inch and a half apart. So each strip holds 50 pixels. So then you make this pyramid kind of shaped thing, and then you can, it's almost like a grid. So your software can make faces, and then it can do fireworks. And
okay, so is this the first year you've had this one then?
Yes, sir. We spoke last year, but I did not get enough pixels because it eats up a lot of resources.
So this is kind of...
Like I say, each pixel is addressable. So you can make a face that talks if you have the ability and skill to do that, which I probably don't yet. But you can have rainbows and swirls and fireworks, and you can make a talking face. And little effects you can do in your software.
I see. I expect Jerry Deviler from Totally Rad Christmas knows a bit about these things.
Yep, very much so. Yeah, Jerry knows about that sort of... Yes, sir.
Can you remind the listeners what are the other ones you got? So you've got the Grinch this year, you've got your tree. What are the other things you've got outside?
We have, well, just a couple of four pixel props. You have snowflakes and packages. And then my evergreens are so tall that it's hard to decorate them. So we just take large LED floodlights and shine them up at the trees.
Oh, nice.
So they kind of light up red, green, blue, and yellow. But it got so hard to put the lights up. And then the tree near the road is near the high power lines. So at one point in time, I had a stick in my hand that was almost as high as the power line. Well, this is foolish because I've got a copper wire coming down from the lights.
And yeah, bearing in mind you're an electrician as well, Frank. A lot of things.
So I should know better. So
wait, and in inflatables, we have Frosty the Snowman. We have Santa with his reindeer. We have Ralphie in the pink bunny suit. We have the Christmas Story actually playing on a big screen.
An inflatable big screen.
Oh, dear. What?
Yeah.
There it is.
Yeah. Yep. And then we have Clark Griswold, and we have
the Christmas tree with the big root ball on it.
His car, and Eddie's RV is inflatable. We have him. We have a snow globe that has a Santa scene in it that's inflatable. And we do have another Grinch inflatable, so we're gonna have two.
Ralphie's kind of weird because it's like the pink nightmare pajama thing.
It's fur.
It's an actual photograph of a face. It's kind of weird.
It's kind of creepy.
It is kind of creepy.
Yeah,
it's inflatable as well.
Correct.
Yeah,
but with a photographic face.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's fun, and we have lots of people that stop, and then the pixel lights play to the music that Frank has programmed, and it plays on their FM radio in their car.
Okay.
At the end of the music, it is our family saying, if the lights are on, come on in and see the village.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. So it's an invitation to come in and see the village. And we typically, starting December 1st, have cookies and hot cocoa every night so that when people come to visit, we're prepared. Yeah.
So I think the main thing from last year's interview was we chatted, and then I put the pictures on Facebook, and I think no one quite understood just how big the village is, because it really is. something else.
We've tried numerous times to get a picture that kind of makes it look appropriate in scale, but you have to get so far back that everything looks so tiny you lose all the
details. Course. Yeah.
Kind of like a classic landscape photo where if you can see how expansive it is, you can't see anything in it. So we struggle with that all the time.
Well, that's what's so great about you sending the video through. So I'm hoping the video will translate when I put it on Facebook so everyone can get a good look at it. Because the video goes into detail. You can see pretty much everything. And that's exactly what people want to see. It really is a work of art. And is it going to, so you've got a new one going to next year. Is the other one going to be even bigger next year, do you think?
I don't have any more space. I replaced one board, I guess the outer left side. I replaced a board and it made it a little bit bigger. It's not a whole lot bigger, but it's about as big as I can go without losing my ability to get through my back door. Yeah. And if it were up to him, we would just have like a straight shot from our kitchen to the back door, and you would have to watch where you go so you don't knock anything down.
He would knock the south wall out, go back about 10 more feet.
Yeah, he wouldn't mind having an addition put on either for it.
But, an extension on the house to fit that in. Yeah, no, it really is lovely. There's a garden center near us that we go to every year, and they do a similar thing. But it's probably about like not even a quarter the size of yours. It's actually probably even less than that. Yours is, it's so magnificent. And I just hope everyone goes on the Facebook page and checks out the video, because it really is a sight to behold. When you've got some pictures of the outdoors, can we get some of those as well, please, Frank?
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
I'm hoping this year to get my drone to like hover in the front, and then I'll superimpose the audio and the video together so it all makes kind of sense to everybody.
Okay.
I'm not a great drone pilot, but I'll risk it, because if it crashes, it crashes. It just sets in a closet. Now I'm afraid to use it. So what's the difference?
That's true. Yeah. Do you know, by the time this episode goes out, we may actually have the pictures from you, because this is going to go out in about nearly 2 weeks, actually, looking at about the 10th of December. So,
all right.
We also we went to the biggest Christmas store in the United States.
Bronner's.
Yeah, Bronner's. It's bigger than Jerry D's. Jerry D's number two.
Yes, you mentioned this on in your email, didn't you? Tell me about it. How was it?
It's amazing.
It's massive, first of all. And it's all basically in different sections. Like there's an entire section for nativity, and there's an entire section for personalized ornaments, and then occupational ornaments, and there's an entire village section, a tree section. Yeah, I think there's 12 different sections. Yeah. Besides the village area, which I could have stayed there all day, but the outdoors at night is amazing. We actually went to our hotel, which was like an hour and a half away, and then came back at night so that we could walk through. And it's very beautifully done, and they have some spectacular outdoor decorations. So it was a lot of fun.
Do you know what? I feel like I'm cheating on Jerry talking about this.
Jerry understands.
He understands. He's a very understanding man. Oh wow! So how far was it for you to get to Bronner's then?
Bronner's is about 240 miles away from us.
How was it? Okay.
So we drove down there. We spent the day in Bronner's, and then we went and looked at the RV, and we came back, and then we went to a hotel, and then that night we went to a Detroit Lions football game down at Ford Field, and then we came home.
Yeah. Good work. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much again. Actually, before I go, what's going on, Frank? What's going on? You've got a job.
Like the Christmas pudding? Yeah, I've been slack. I'm sorry.
Have you been slack? Slacking.
Yes.
My correspondents, you've been slacking. But you were doing such a good job.
He's not a self-appointed anything.
Well, he was. He's curious customs correspondent, Frank. Yeah. Give me a curious custom.
I think I found one today. Have you ever heard of Elfapalooza?
Oh, no, I like the sound of that. Okay, cool.
It's a festival where they try and get as many people in elf costumes in this little town down south as they can.
Okay, send that through. Send me a link. And then maybe the segment after this will be me talking about that.
All right.
Okay,
cool. Okay, well, thank you so much again, guys. It's so wonderful to see you both again. And it's so great to see the village. I hope everyone checks out the Facebook page and has a look at it. And will you come back again next year?
Absolutely.
I don't care if you've not added anything. I just want to see you both again.
All right.
Yep.
And you can see the girls again as well, you lucky people.
Yeah, awesome. Bigger.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Say goodbye to everyone.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
You know, I've got to say, I absolutely adored chatting to Frank and Shelley again. And it was so cool looking at the village. And what was really nice is, as we're chatting, she goes, oh, look, it's snowing. And she held the camera up to the window. And there, in their garden, they had like some big old trees. And the snow was just coming down. And it was laid thick as well. It was so lovely, so festive. Because we've had a sprinkling of snow here in the UK. Tiny little bit. We don't get a lot, you know, generally. Sometimes we do, but it's very rare. But we have had a sprinkling. And it's literally a sprinkling. I'm talking about like icing sugar on top of a cookie. That's how much we've had. But this was lovely to see. And it was so nice that like the girls saw it as well. And it was quite magical, I have to say. And one thing I want to emphasise about what Frank and Shelley said was, they actually say to you, if the lights are on, come in and see the village. And that's to everyone. Isn't that a wonderful... That's what Christmas is all about. That they're inviting people they don't know, strangers, into their home to come and have a look at the Christmas village. And they get free cookies and cocoa. Do you know what? I'm almost considering flying over there just for the cookies and cocoa. I tell you what, I'll do anything for free stuff, though. I'm not awful for that. I am. So, yeah, don't be surprised if I do pop round for some cocoa and cookies for free. Because I like free stuff. I will be putting the pictures up on Facebook again. And yeah, hopefully Frank's going to send me some pictures of the displays he's got outside as well, so I can show those. But one last time, I want to say a massive thank you to my friends Frank and Shelley Arnold for the interview. Now it's time for this. So you heard me chatting to Frank and Shelley. And Frank was telling me about this Elfapalooza. So straight after, I started researching about Elfapalooza. And this is what I can tell you. So in 2014, December the 13th, in Mobile, Alabama, they had what I believe was the first ever Elfapalooza, where they attempted to break the record of 1,167 elves in one place, which was actually set in England only the year before, in 2013. And they managed to get, are you ready, 1,202, which beat the record set in England by 35 elves. However, 18 days before the first Elfapalooza, Siam Paragon Development Company from Bangkok, Thailand, they had a go at the record and they smashed it. And they got, are you ready, 1,762, which is like 560 more. I think what's interesting, that is actually on the Guinness World Records website, and it says 14 were disqualified because they didn't have the correct costume on. So I don't know what was going on there. Like, I don't know if they just turned up in an elf hat with like jeans and t-shirt, and they were like, what? What do you think you're doing coming in here? Just like, you're not an elf, get out of here. And they're like, no, I am an elf, I'm just like, it's my day off, so I don't have to wear those clothes. Like, get out. Get out, you're not part of the world record, you're just some guy in his jeans and t-shirt. Probably, I don't know, I wasn't there. It's Thailand, isn't it? It's miles away. So yeah, the people from Mobile, Alabama, if they'd had Elfapalooza like 19 days earlier, they would have had the world record. They would have only held it for one day, but they would have had the record. But they didn't win it. And the thing is, I've pretty much given away what happened next, because the following year, they had another go at it, and the next year, they had another go, and the next year, they had another go. They couldn't break the blooming record. And to be honest, it doesn't sound like that many, really, does it? Do you know what I mean? That's 1,700 people. I reckon my daughter's school's got that many. Maybe not her school, but like when she gets to secondary school. Well, I know which school she's going to, and I reckon they've probably got about that many kids. Get them all to dress up as elves one day. Next thing you know, you've got a world record on your hands. Yeah. But, you know, it's that record has stood for 7 years now. And the people in Mobile, Alabama, doing the old Elfapalooza, they just can't seem to break it. Which is really sad, because they just keep trying. The guys in Thailand have one go. I don't know what the other scores have been since, because I had a good old look on the website, and yeah, I couldn't find anything else about it, actually, like, numbers-wise. The only one I found was their first attempt, where, sadly, they didn't get it. So I actually sent the guys at the city of Mobile, Alabama, like their Facebook page, the events page, a message asking like if they could give me some more info about it and if it was going to be happening again, because it looks like it went for like 4 or 5 years. I think 2019 was the last time. And this is what they put. I assume they didn't do it 2020 because of like COVID and that. But this is what she's put. Or I say she, they've put. Hello, thank you so much for reaching out. Elfapalooza is actually an event from the past which is no longer being executed. However, we are always happy to chat about other events on our holiday calendar. That was it. That's all they gave me. So it looks like they've given up. It's like, no, do you know what? Forget it. We can't do it. But the whole Elfapalooza thing, it's not just a bunch of people standing up there dressing as elves. They have like a bit of a festival about it. You know, they have live music and they have like this thing called the Art Walk where like all the galleries and that stay open late. But alas, it sounds like a lot of fun, but they've never broken a record. Just a bit of background, actually. So in 2009, the record, 2009, it's not that long ago, right? The record then was set in New York. Do you know how many it was? 607. That's next to none. Do you know what I mean? I'd probably see 607 people dressed as elves when I'm like walking down the street on an average Sunday. That's not true, obviously, but you know. Doesn't sound like a lot, does it? 607. That was 2009. 2 years later, in Tipperary in Ireland, the record was broken and it was still only 936. So that's not a lot. And then 2013, this is the record that they were trying to break, but then the people in Thailand did break it. It was Wetherby in Yorkshire in the UK. And that was 1,167 elves. Not a lot, really. Well, I suppose, well, it is a lot, actually, when you think about it. Do you know what I mean? I won't lie to you. I've never actually seen 1,167 elves all in one place recently. But here's another interesting thing, right? Have a guess, right? So that's the most, the record now of the most elves gathered in one place is 1,762, right? What do you reckon the largest gathering of Santas is? What do you reckon it is? Have a guess. Right, as I'm sitting in out, have a guess. Right, just shout it out. Wherever you are, when you're on the treadmill, in the gym, just shout as loud as you can so it sort of scares the person next to you. Shout out how many you think it is. Right, did you do that? Right, why did you do that? People in that gym, they're trying to do their exercises, they're trying to lose a bit of weight, and they've got some weirdo standing there shouting numbers out of the top of their voice. Why would you do a thing like that? Don't do what I tell you to do. Goodness me. Right, let's just get this out. Right, the record for the most Santas, yeah? 18,112. 18,000. And elves, they can't even get 10% of that. What's that about? It's obvious, isn't it? People love Santa. Yeah. So here's another thing. While I'm doing this research, about a week ago, there was a big event in Weymouth, which is like a beach town, maybe only about an hour from me. It's not that far. They had a go at the world record, apparently. It sort of says they were going for the world record, but there was no one there to judge it, and it sounded like they were just getting people to wear elf hats. I think you've actually got to wear red and green clothing as well for the record. Yeah, but they didn't say how many they got. So it was just like, yeah, we had a go. But the way they were talking was that they'll have a better go at it next year. But, you know, there could be other people out there having a go next year as well. But I just found that interesting because it's like, oh, hang on, no, it's just down the road from me. So there you go. Yeah, I didn't know anything about that. I say just down the road, it's still an hour. But I didn't know anything about it until I was researching this. So there you go. Anyway, I want to say thanks for Frank for giving me that to look at Elfapalooza. They don't do it anymore. But, you know, it was fun while it lasted, I guess. Let's move on to this.
I'm singing! I'm in a stall when I'm singing! I'm in a stall and I'm singing!
Hey! There's no singing in the North Pole. Last year, I got an expert chef in to tell the listeners how to make the perfect Christmas pudding. Well, this year, I'm speaking to the same expert and they're going to be telling you how to cook your turkey perfectly this Christmas. So, yeah, here they are. So, girls, can you tell us the best way to cook a turkey?
In the oven. Well, yeah, you always cook it in the oven, though. Well, the best way to cook a turkey is probably... maybe put hot water in it and then... put a crack in it, put hot water in it and cold water in it, and then shut it and then put it in the oven, and then probably leave it in for 20 million hours.
Hold on, 20 million hours?
Yeah.
And what temperature does it need to be?
One hot.
Yeah. And what is that in centigrade?
I don't know what you mean.
Okay, what is it in Fahrenheit?
I don't know what that means either. Mummy, either.
Well, what do you use to make the stuffing then for the turkey? Stuffing, the stuff that goes inside the turkey. You're the chef, you tell me, what do you use to make the stuffing?
We use cotton wool.
You're not stuffing a cuddly toy. You're stuffing the turkey to eat on Christmas Day. What are you going to put in its belly for you to eat? As you eat it as well?
Milk? Maybe ice cream with milk in it? I don't know what stuffing is. I'm not a chef.
Don't tell them that. I've already told them you are a chef. You say, yeah, I am a chef. Say that.
Yeah, I am a chef.
Right, so what do you stuff the turkey with?
Chocolate buttons and ice cream. And maybe... some chewy and lollipop.
There we have it, folks. That is the perfect way to cook your turkey on Christmas Day. Thank you for that, Chef Robin and Chef Juniper. What song are you singing for us this week?
Feliz Navidad!
Okay, take it away, ladies.
Feliz Navidad! Feliz Navidad! Feliz Navidad! Prospero año! Felicidad! Feliz Navidad, Feliz Navidad, Feliz Navidad, Feliz Navidad, Prospero año, Felicidad. We wanna wish you a Merry Christmas. I wanna wish you a Merry Christmas. I wanna wish you a Merry Christmas off the bottom of my heart.
So there you go. That was, the girls singing. Now it's time for this. This episode's recommendation is Those Two Girls. It's their podcast. Now, if you're a regular listener, you will be well aware that Robin and Juno have got their own podcast. It's called I'm Not Complaining with Robin and Juno. If you weren't aware of that, and you've only just started listening to the show, Those Two Girls have got their own podcast. I'm pretty sure that Juno is probably the youngest podcast host in the world, actually. But I contacted Guinness Book of Records, and they weren't interested. But they are interested in seeing how many elves can stand around in one place. So, you know, swings and roundabouts, I guess, isn't it? So, yeah, that's this week's recommendation. If you want to check out the girls' podcast, it comes out normally every Monday. Sometimes the girls are not interested, so, you know, we'll give it a fortnight. Yeah, and it's called I'm Not Complaining with Robin and Juno, and it's pretty much just what you just heard, but for about sort of 6 to 8 minutes every episode. It's a lovely podcast. It's just something nice and bright for your Monday morning. So if you want to check it out, have a listen. Robin and Juno, I'm Not Complaining. And if you want to find it online, it's anchor.fm/notcomplaining. Check out their podcast. And that is it for this episode. I told you it was going to be jam-packed, and it was jam-packed. There was a lot there, and I just hope you enjoyed it all. Yeah, that's pretty much it, really. I don't think I've got anything else to say. So I'll be back again in about 10 days again. So this is another quick one. Oh, actually, before I go, another quick recommendation. So Scott Newman, who was on last episode and the episode before, he's got a new podcast. It's like a daily one. It comes out Monday to Friday, every day, in the build-up to Christmas, where they chat about sort of Christmas news, what's on TV, so, which is more suited for the US audience, really, because if you're in the UK, they're talking about what's on TV, like Christmas-related in the States. But then they like have a little battle of Christmas songs at the end. It's a lovely little podcast. It's only about 20 minutes long. It's a nice way to start your day in the build-up to Christmas. Check it out. Yeah, it's called Christmas Morning Podcast with Scott and Bran. So, yeah, sorry, I'm off now. Yeah, I should have said that. I was saying it, wasn't I? I was in the middle of saying that when I stopped myself. So I'm going now. I'll be back in 10 days. That'll be the last full episode before Christmas. So, yeah, keep your eyes peeled for that. In the meantime, you know I love you. Merry Christmas.
Who's your daddy? Who's your daddy? Oh God, I'm your daddy. I'm your daddy. I'm your daddy.
My eyes.
Oh God.
My eyes. My eyes. My eyes.
We're going to hell.
You think I don't know that?